Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Excellent. Just find out where I put my notes. We are going to be joined shortly by Chris Mitchell, and then we can jump into introductions and get started.
Okay, great.
Hard to believe that it is a Thursday morning already.
I felt like Thursday yesterday.
Oh no.
I hate that when you're like a day off and you're like, oh gosh,
That is true.
that happens to me a lot lately. I mean, every week I'm like, wow, all that happened this week, and it's a little much. And then I don't know where you are, but it's really hot here in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I'm a runner, and I haven't been running and as much as I would
Oh
like to,
no.
because it's I can't.
Oh no. So that must really throw you off then, I'm sure.
I know, I had this like goal of walking or running 10 miles a day, and
Wow.
I think I'm still on that average for the year, but the past couple days have not been kind to my mileage. So my husband became a runner during the pandemic, and it's not good because we're competitive. But
Oh
he
no.
acts like he's not competitive, but there's one more track meet and I will beat him in the mile.
I
Yeah,
hope the heat breaks before then.
I know.
That would be good.
Yeah, anyway, sorry.
That's great. Well, I actually saw that theme throughout your resume and materials.
Yes.
So it certainly sounds like an important part of your life, and I can understand that. We have a few avid runners on staff. I am much more of a walker
Yeah.
biker. I am in awe of those that are consistently long distance runners. So that's good, and I hope the weather breaks. And Chris, thank you
Morning.
for jumping
Hi.
in. Good morning.
And I know I'm coming into sounds like a track and field conversation.
Yes.
I was a sprinter in high school, so that's
Okay, well
my
then
claim to fame. And I'm not a distance runner at all either.
Okay, well, I can't sprint, and it's embarrassing. We have a all-comers track meet in the summers, and a couple times I will, for just fun, do the 100 meters, and I'm always last. So I just can't sprint. Can't do it.
Yeah, and it's exciting. This is the time of year with the Olympics come up on Friday, so that's when I kind of like relive my high school days by
Yeah.
watching track and field every every 4 years or whatever. So
I know, I
can't
love it.
wait
I'm
for that. But
excited. I'm excited.
countdown till tomorrow where we can see the Olympic Games. So should be fun. So let me start first. We can go into introductions, then a little bit about the interview process today. And first, do you pronounce your name Leah?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Well, good morning, Leah.
Thank you.
My name is Diane Urquhart. I'm our Director of Operations here at NCTE. And just to explain a little bit about what that involves, I'm very much involved in the support aspects of NCTE, working with our IT resources, as well as HR, which is one of the hats I'm wearing in today's call. But also, one of the realities and benefits of working at NCTE with a relatively small staff is we have the ability to really collaborate closely in many different areas of the organization. So I also work closely with our annual convention team, as well as very, very closely with Chris in the membership areas that he's responsible for also. So it's great to meet with you today. We're excited about the interview, and I'll let Chris introduce himself as well.
Sure. My name is Chris Mitchell. It's very, very nice to meet you. Glad you can be with us today. So I'm director of marketing and membership with NCTE, and so I oversee several areas within that group, which is communications function, which includes social media, traditional media communications and public relations, as well as email communications and things like that. We also have photography and video capabilities with one of our staff members to keep the NCTE content fresh and really consistent. I also oversee a graphic designer who works literally for everyone in the organization, but all of his work does come through our department. And then we also have the editor of the Council Chronicle, which is the NCT member news magazine. That is also published within the marketing and communications area. And then, of course, Diane mentioned membership, which is also a big, big, important part of the membership and marketing team. And just to build on what Diane said, we work super closely together on, you know, from Diane's operations perspective. We always can use another set of eyes on strategy, on plans, on analysis and things like that. So we work really, really closely together on a lot of projects. And I started with NCTE back last August, so I'm coming up just upon a year, and Diane just started with us in February. So we're both relatively new to the organization. So we're learning, I would say we are learning a lot as we go together. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
That's good. That is very true. Excellent. Well, Leah, what we will do is we'll shift at some point in the conversation to some standard interview questions. Mm-hmm. So if you find Chris or I reading from a screen, mine's over here, or reading from paper, it's because we are very intentional in this process, and we want to be sure that we're asking consistent questions among all of our interview candidates. So if it sounds scripted, there are parts that are.
Okay.
So just naming that now. We also take a lot of notes to make sure that we're capturing feedback and responses. So if you hear pauses, it's because we're probably lagging on note-taking on this end. But feel free to ask questions throughout the discussion. This is really meant to be an open conversation. We'll go through those standard questions, and then I will make sure we have room at the end for questions that you have, recognizing interviews are really a two-way street.
Right.
Make sure that you get to understand NCTE and our culture as well while we have time together today.
Okay.
But I always like to start with some background information before we jump into the interview questions. Starting with, what do you know about us so far and this opportunity, and what drew you to it?
Well, I have a relationship with your organization because I worked at Learning Without Tears, and I believe, and I might be wrong, but I feel like either I have been to one of your conferences, or I just knew about them. Maybe we had people that had gone to your conference, but as an MFA, having an MFA in creative writing, and my husband is an English literature professor at Wichita State University. I have like a strong love of language, literature, writing, and I have a daughter who is an intense reader. And I think she wants to be a librarian or a teacher of English. I'm sure my husband is trying to get her to study English. And it's interesting because I asked Fran if he had heard of your organization. He's like, I don't think they handle, college. I'm like, yes, they do. And you should be a member. And you should be a member. But I'm already selling your organization to my husband.
That's great.
I'm going to try to be calm here because like this is a dream interview for me. If I weren't going to get an interview like with the Chicago Marathon, this is the field that I want to be in. And I did have an interview with Chicago Marathon, by the way, which was like, I can't move to Chicago, but you know, I'm going to take this. because of my background, I have a background in a nonprofit membership organization, which is Academy Health. And I worked there for almost 20 years, and I was in charge of, I was like the manager of web services. And I was involved in their annual meeting a lot. I would take pictures at their meeting, and I mean, I was working on their first webs. I mean, it's so funny to think about what life was like in 1998, but I mean, it was different. I don't know how old you all are, but I had a friend, like I recently updated my resume to include some of my earlier work because I didn't have Academy Health or Catholics for Choice or my first real job as a legislative assistant and an office manager of the Congressional Caucus for Women's Issues. But my dad, who used to be a strategic marketing consultant and had a very successful business, and I can't believe I didn't use him as my career coach until now. He was like, no, you really should put that stuff on there because it's an interesting thing to talk about. And I put it on there. And then my other friend, who's a little bit older than me, he's like, Leah, you don't really want to put a job on there that could be before a colleague was born. I was like, that hurts. But I see your point. But I don't care. I'm putting it on there. So anyway, So I had that experience with a membership nonprofit organization with Academy Health. I also have experience with the Track Club, which is a nonprofit membership organization. But then I have the 22 years at Learning Without Tears, which is education focused. And I did, like, my background there is I met, because of my job at Academy of Health, a friend of mine was a friend of the son of the woman, Jan Olson, who created Learning Without Tears. And she said, oh, you know, I have a friend. He's trying to find somebody to do their website. You're doing the website here. You know, could you meet with him? I'm like, sure. So we met at a bagel shop. We hit it off, and he wanted me to do their website. And then, you know, next thing you know, I'm like, wow, you really need to change the way you create these workbooks. And then got into email and more web management and marketing and creative services. And so I had a lot of roles at Learning Without Tears. And if it weren't for the restructuring and COVID and everything, I'd still probably be working there. But I like to look at it as a good thing, because I probably would have never left there. And because I just believed in the products and the vision of the creators. I am really still good friends with Emily Napton, who created the Get Set for School program, pre-K readiness program. And so I probably would have never left. And I think in some ways, my supervisor of 10 years had left was asked to leave in January of 2020. And that kind of shook me, and nothing was the same between that time and the time when I eventually left in September. My new supervisor who came in was like, I really think that your talents are being underutilized here. And I'm like, yeah, I agree with you, but I'm kind of like on the apprentice where I don't always raise my hand to be a project lead because I just want to, you know, keep my job and like do what I enjoy doing and helping people and everything. But when I did start raising my hand to be a lead and making suggestions and whatnot, it wasn't always listened to, and that was frustrating. And so I could definitely see that I wanted to keep the company. I mean, not that I have power over the whole company, but like the way I saw the company was the way it started, and I wanted to keep that. And so when I was working on social media for the company, I hadn't talked to Emily Napton in a while, and she was like, I don't know what ended up happening, but I connected with her on social media, and she's like, and I told her that I was handling it now, and I did it for about 2 years, and she's like, I could tell that somebody who knew the company was working on it because it felt so real and authentic. And I loved connecting with the customers, which was amazing to me, and to see the difference that the products had in children's lives. And I feel like the same way about, I mean, like handwriting, teaching kids how to express themselves through writing is what you're all about too. And I mean, the power that has in our society, it's so important. And I, as a child, I loved writing, and I think about my favorite teachers were my English teachers, and it's just so important to me, and that's why this really appealed to me. And that's a long answer to that question, and I've been accused of kind of like going a little beyond the time limit for questions, so if I have, let me know and I'll speed it up next time. But I just feel like this really hits all of my strengths and passions, so I think it is a really great next step for me. And also because it's a remote position, and I've only recently added that to my resume, that I've successfully worked remotely the entire time I worked at Learning Without Tears. And the last 5 or so years at Academy Health, I mean, basically I had 2 jobs for a long time. And I, as soon as I had moved to Charlottesville, which was when my daughter was 1 and she's going to be 17, I have worked remotely for both jobs. And then I decided just to focus on one. But so I haven't been in an office in a long time. It was in Washington, D.C. And I know, because of COVID, a lot of people had to work remote and they were not good at it. And there are some people that are good at working remote and some that aren't, and I am good at it. So And I thrive at it. And so when I was starting to look for other positions and I was getting some interviews for jobs in Charlottesville, and I would ask if they had like some kind of hybrid environment, and it was like, no, you have to be in the office every day. I'm like, okay, I'll pass, because I just can't do it. And that's when I decided that I had, like, I'm only going to apply for jobs that I can work remote and that are upfront about the salary requirements, because that's another game I don't like to play. Yep. So anyway, so that's why I love this position. It was straight out, told you what the salary was, you know, said it was remote. And I was like, okay, check, check. And also it's like my field.
That's great. Well, and certainly I didn't want to jump in and interrupt you, because you shared a lot of great information about how this opportunity resonates with you, which is exactly what we want to understand in this conversation. So thank you for sharing all of that.
Okay.
And I'm resisting the urge to go down the path about what traits you have or what habits you have that make you a great remote worker. I'm going to hold on that, because I think there are some other areas that we want to get to in terms of culture discussion and work experience. Mm-hmm. So we'll dig a little bit further into that. Gosh, I just lost my train of thought. Like, sentence there. Chris, what question do you have?
Yeah, I think we can just dig right in to some of the questions that we have that are consistent amongst all the interviews. But so first question, Leah, that I wanted to ask was if you could just describe the most complex digital marketing initiative you've led in your professional career. So just tell us a little bit about what the initiative was, the timeline, the budget, who else was involved in helping you complete the project, if you led it entirely yourself, that kind of thing. Goals and deliverables, were you able to meet them, things like that.
Okay. I'll do my best to answer that question, and I'm trying to figure out how...
And I know there were lots of sub-questions in there, so we're just wanting to describe a complex digital project that you've worked on.
Right. So I could you know, take the easy answer and talk about my track club stuff, because there is no budget, and... And I manage everything.
Right.
Or I could talk about my stuff at Learning Without Tears, in which I wasn't completely in control of everything. So at Learning Without Tears, let me just figure out the best way to answer this question. I was in charge of creating all the email campaigns, like literally creating the campaigns, working on that audience segmentation, working on the tactics and the... so we used... In the time that I was there, we used three different systems. We started with Constant Contact, had really simple emails, nothing complex. And then we went to Bronto, and then we had more campaigns with different steps and automation and like different tracks and whatnot. And then we moved to Alterian SDL, which was super complex, had a lot of power. In terms of like the tactics, the personalization, and all of that. It's important for me to, I think you said you have one graphic designer. Did you say, okay, that's funny to me, because there was a gazillion graphic designers at Learning With
Us. We have one. So just to clarify, one that does the majority of our graphic design, and then others on staff who can create social images.
Right.
Do other things. So I say we always find a way to get it done.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, but I also have a relationship with Really Great Reading. And they have one graphic designer. And first of all, I have to say that I love the look and feel of your website and all of your materials. Like, it's so clean, you know, stands out. It's easy. Your site is easy to navigate. And I mean, it doesn't hurt me to look at any of your stuff. Sometimes when I take a little peek at what Learning Without Tears does, it makes me want to cry. But where I was going with that is that I to understand my job at Learning Without Tears and to understand what I was in charge of and what I was doing and what I'm capable of are probably two different things. And so in some respects, you might have to take a leap of faith in hiring me, because I might not have all the... examples that you want for this position. But if my 22 years at Learning Without Tears and all the different roles I had at that company don't show you that I have initiative. And if I don't know something, I'll learn it. And like everything that I have done at Learning Without Tears, I was never trained in. I figured it out. I took the initiative. Like I never thought of myself as a graphic designer. I became a graphic designer. I never thought of myself as a marketer. I became a marketer. I mean, so it's been a great experience for me, but I also feel like I didn't get the mentorship and learn the skill, all the skills I wanted. I feel like I know a lot about a little. And so I just accidentally hit the wrong button. And that's good in, for some potential positions that I know a lot of things, but like, you know, am I an expert in Google Analytics? No. Do I understand metrics? Yes. You know, am I willing to put it into work to figure out what everything means and to present it in a way that people can use it? Yes. But like the culture at Learning Without Tears, I was there for so long and saw so many drastic changes. It was like I said, a lot of times I was just like, just do the work, make people happy. Don't rock the boat because people will keep coming and going and coming and going and coming and going, and you just stay. I'm like the longest. I mean, I think there's one. I was employee number four basically, and there's probably like two people, and they're not creative. They're not anything in product development or creative services or marketing. I was like probably the longest. I was definitely the longest person there that in marketing. But anyway, my point is that the structure of the marketing department was confusing to me. And because I didn't have a marketing background, you know, I just accepted everything the way it was. But we had, you know, a revolving door of marketing directors, and we had a lot of, I'm trying to think of what their titles were. Like, I don't know if they were managers or coordinators or whatever, but they were like the campaign leads or whatever. And we had that was also a revolving door. And so we had people so part of my job was implementing things that other people, campaigns that other people devised, and other things were like completely like my ownership. So I was in charge of the workshop emails. We had some templates that were created, but then I started modifying them and testing them out, like subject lines, the lists, the images, the text, blah, blah, blah. So the only thing I had complete control over were these workshop emails, like the cadence, the promo codes and whatnot. And then I started adding like social media ads to that, and doing social posts, regarding the workshops. And during COVID we switched to virtual. So I was trying to connect with people that had taken our virtual workshops or had really good pictures of like, oh, you know, I would find like a picture of a person with a computer next to a pool. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a great image for our virtual workshop. Can we use that? And I was really good at building relationships with customers and teachers and OTs because I could see, I have like intuition and I have a good sense about somebody who is creative and has a good like energy and would be somebody good to work with. And I could tell that some of the people that I noticed early on in my work at Learning Without Tears ended up becoming really big and having a lot of followers and really kind of influencer, you know, thought leader type people. And it was because I saw that in them before they became big. So, but anyway, so I was constantly in our department is in a struggle where my supervisor, she was really into data. She was amazing. She came up with some awesome ideas and we were a great team. We worked together really well and we would bang things out and get successful things done. And then all these other people came in who didn't want to look at the data or didn't understand the processes. And then we'd have to implement things that we didn't think were great ideas because we were forced to. And that was uncomfortable. So there were just so many people involved. There were so many graphic designers and you go to one graphic designer, they give you one look and feel, you go to another, you get another. And despite the fact that we had a style book and everything, it was just all over the place. But I loved, like I said, I love the products and I love the mission of the company. And so that's why I kept staying. And I don't really know what working for another company is like. I've only had long-term relationships with two companies. And so it is daunting to think about starting somewhere new, but I do think I'm going to, full disclosure, I looked at the recommendations, Chris, of you on LinkedIn, and I loved what people were saying about you and working with you. And I'm like, that's somebody I want to work with because you have a lot of the same qualities that JJ, my former supervisor, had. And I think a lot of the stuff that was said about you would have been said about JJ too. And just the idea that, somebody might want to do something one way and then you present all this data and they take a chance and do it your way and then you end up being right. That's rewarding. I had an experience at learning with that. I mean, not learning without tears, at Charlottesville Track Club, where they wanted to send out a newsletter as a PDF. And I was like, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. You can't. I mean, you could do that, but you can't do it. And let me explain all the reasons why this is a bad idea. And there was a power struggle. And long story short, they ended up doing it. And not only did they, it's like they couldn't have orchestrated it to go more wrong if I gave them instructions on how to do it wrong. Like the person sent out emails, didn't blind copy people, CC'd them. They included this like 9 megabyte PDF. They made sure to exclude me so I didn't see it, but they didn't realize that they sent it to my identical twin sister. So I found out about it. It was just horrible. But I was like, thank you for proving my point. Thank you for not listening to me, doing exactly what I knew you would do wrong, and upsetting a former board member. God knows, I don't know, because I don't have access to the email account, how many other people complained about it, but I know that this board member and my sister did, so God knows how many other people. But I do have a weak spot for people not listening to people who know what they're talking about, but I am the first to admit when I've made a mistake, and I'm also eager to learn. And so I do really want to have and so as you mentioned, the interviewing process is getting to know you as well as me, and I know that with my next position, it's very important that I feel like I'm in a space that I'm valued, but I'm allowed to make mistakes and I'm allowed to learn and grow. I don't want to be working in a place of fear or dishonesty or a lack of integrity. Integrity is very important to me. Ethics are important to me. And so I need to know that I'm working in a place that has rules and regulations and a clear mission and, values, good people, because that's how you get success in my mind. So that covered a lot. I don't know if you were taking notes because my eyes are going all over the place, but that's my little spiel about, because, clearly I'm a good marketer because I've gotten a lot of interviews and I find them all to be really great learning experiences for me. There are certain interviews that are like top tier, like this one that I'm really don't want to blow, but I also can't stop from being my authentic self. It's very important to me because I could be fake, but I don't want to. So, this is the person I am. And if you think this fits with, your department and you like what you're hearing, then I know that I would fit in this position. If you think, wow, she's nuts, or she's way too honest, or this or that, or the other thing, then that's fine. Because not everybody can work well with each other, because I've learned that the hard way. So, I was talking to somebody else. I mean, it is important to have boundaries and to take breaks and regarding work and everything. But if you really enjoy, and I know it's trite to say, if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not work. But I've found doing the work, when I get drained or burnt out, it's not the work, it's the drama, the unhealthy relationships, and the lack of communication, clarity, transparency, and honesty. And I can't be in a place where I think things are being done that I consider wrong. And not like, you know, black and white facts wrong, but like morally wrong. It's a really important, like, I wouldn't want to work for a company that sells something that's based on a lie. You know, like, I know that the products we sold worked. And so I believed in them. And that's why I was happy to make sure millions of kids could use them. Would I want to work for a company that sells, you know, like sugar cereal? Not, probably not, because it's just not a good thing. But could I probably do it because I eat a lot of it and I probably do a good job marketing it? Yeah. But do I want kids eating sugar cereal? No. I want them reading literature.
That's true. Anyway. Very true. And actually, Leah, something that you said a short while ago is a great segue into the next question that we have.
Okay.
And it is, and I'd really like to hear an example behind this, because you've sort of talked on this topic, but I'd like to know a specific instance just to understand your past work experience and how you've responded to the situation. So if you will, share an example when you had to build buy-in and influence without formal authority. How have you moved diverse stakeholders towards a shared goal?
Okay, could you repeat that first part of that again?
Sure. Share an example when you had to build buy-in and influence without formal authority. How have you moved diverse stakeholders towards a shared goal?
Well, obviously in that situation with the PDF newsletter, it didn't work. I mean, I feel like I should talk about that as an example because not only did I make my case I wrote detailed emails citing different things, giving examples, showing like, and I ended up the first newsletter, I ended up, by the way, so there were two newsletters, and the first one I got it, and I was like horrified. I was like, oh my God, this looks horrible. I can't send this out, but I don't want to, I can't insult him because he just told me he spent like 6 hours working on this. And I'm like, I don't want to be mean. So, how can I avoid conflict and try to do this the right way? So my, initial way to handle it was like, I was like, tried to like skirt the issue and be like, great, thanks for the PDF. I'll create an email and put the information on our website and, you know, and I'll get you something right away. So I got that like late at night and I was like, let me just bang this out and, you know, I'll just avoid the whole PDF thing. So I did the email, I did the website, everything. And Mark Lorenzoni, he wrote a lot of the articles and he was the coach. He's my coach and everything. He was like, looks great, blah, blah, blah. And, but I wasn't getting feedback from the other people. The guy that Rick is the guy that made the newsletter. And he's like, oh, well, I really want to send a PDF out. Can we do that? I'm like, oh, I'll post a link to the PDF, but I really don't think you should send it as an email. And that's when I sent him this long detailed. I'm like, I'm so sorry that you spent all this time doing it. I understand because I've been there. You know, I'm a graphic designer. I don't know if you know that. And, you know, so I have a lot of experience in this. And it takes me a long time to do things sometimes, too. But I probably could do this a little bit better. And could you send me the files and I'll fix a few things and I'll post it. Because there was no way. I would have died on that sword. I was not going to post that or send that PDF out. I just wasn't. I couldn't. I've been doing this. I've been maintaining the brand, the Charlottesville Track, doing everything for the Charlottesville Track Club in terms of social media, everything, email, whatever, website, for 13 years. I refused. So, but I went out of my way to be quick and provide, you know, the alternative that I thought was important. So I ended up, he didn't send me the file. And I was like, this isn't a good sign. So, And then his friend sent me an email saying, Rick really worked hard in this, and I think you need to send it out as is. I'm like, at that point, I had already sent out the email, and I don't know why they all didn't notice, but it already got like a 40% open rate, and the click rate was awesome, and, you know, and we were getting traffic to the website, and yada, yada, yada. So clearly, I already had the data showing that my approach worked. To make a long story short, they I thought the whole thing was over. However, in June, I get another email from the board saying that we've decided that the board has decided that we are going to send this PDF out as is, and if you won't do it, we'll do it. And, you know, I threw a fit, but in a very detailed way. And then what happened where they ended up sending it out. And they couldn't have done a better job of messing it up. I was actually proud of them for proving my point. So where we go from here, I'm not sure because I told them this, like, there's so much damage from this situation. I don't know if we can recover from it. But I am so passionate about running, and everybody knows all the work that I do for this, that it's probably not possible for me to extricate myself. But my dad was like, you just need to quit. So it's hard to get people who, another thing at Learning Without Tears, they wanted to do some campaign with like, I can't even remember, but I was like, this is a really bad idea. It's not going to work. And this is a bad idea. And I'm like, we have to tell them that this is a bad idea. And I even got in an argument with my supervisor, like, we have to do this. She was saying, we have to do this. I'm like, it's not a good idea. And we ended up doing it and it didn't work, whatever. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example where we wanted to do something and everybody disagreed with us, and then we had to convince them, and then if we did it, I can't off the top of my head think of that. I'm sure it happened. All these other examples that are in my head that don't quite fit your scenario. So
with the example that you gave, I'm curious, you can answer either question. One, why do you think they didn't listen and press forward with the PDF attachment? Or two, from the experience that you had through June, is there anything you would have done differently to try to convince them on the front end?
I honestly, based on the genders of everybody involved, I'm the only woman in the room, and there were two other women who tried to tell them what to do, to listen to me and tell them that I knew what I was doing. And all the people that weren't listening to me were men. No offense, Chris, but it really, there were men that were listening to me, but like, one of the other people that has been in these board meetings was like, this guy likes to mansplain things to me. And like, I felt like there was an obvious gender bias here. I don't understand exactly, but also it was a power trip. And I'm like, you know, you really should pick your battles. It doesn't seem the whole thing was idiotic, because like, I can't think of a worse idea than upsetting the person who does all the work. So, and if you're going to join the board of an organization, maybe you should think about who does all the work and talk to them and find out what their role is and how you can help support them instead of deciding to create your role. I mean, everything about their thought was flawed. They're like, we want to target this to older people. Well, old people don't really like PDFs on their phone. I mean, if you're going to make a stereotype, that's what one of the other people was trying. I mean, like, when I heard all the stuff that everybody else did to try to convince them, it wasn't just me, you know, I think they saw, like, I refused to back down. They refused to back down, I think is the issue. And I wasn't going to back down either. So I mean, to talk about my problem solving skills, I went to the local, the Center for Nonprofit Excellence to talk to them about how to handle this situation and to explain to them that I have this board who wasn't even actually elected by the laws of the bylaws telling me how to do something that I've been doing for 13 years. And not only do I know how to do it because I've been doing it for this organization for 13 years, but I literally got paid to do this. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, how do we go from here? And she was trying to say, yeah, I think everybody needs to have a discussion about roles and responsibilities of the board versus volunteers and whatever. But like, I'm at the point where I just don't know if it's worth it. I don't know what to do. I don't know if it's worth the investment. I know that the president of the track club kept like acting like, I have to meet with you. I have to meet with you. And I'm like, I can't say what I want to say any more clear than I am in writing. And I prefer to have everything in writing. So, you know, I don't know what else. If you don't feel comfortable telling me how you feel in writing, then maybe you shouldn't say it to my face either. I don't know. But like, so I don't know. Sorry to go on a tangent about that. But I mean, I think it goes to how, like, I really do think this is a good example of how I handle conflict. And, you know, sometimes you have to let people make them. I mean, I didn't want them to make the mistake that they did, but they decided that on their own. And it just proved my point. Like I said, I'm making efforts to try to fix. Once again, it's all about relationship building and team building. And I have a lot of allies in the community who know the value of my work. So it, like I said, it like literally makes no sense unless it's somebody that likes power and has an issue with strong women. That's the only thing I can think of. It doesn't make any sense otherwise.
Yeah, that's definitely unfortunate and not something that you should expect to experience within our culture to come on board as well.
Yeah.
That is unique, that's for sure. Just keeping an eye on time.
I know, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was just going to say, we do have a hard stop. I've got the annual convention meeting following this. So I do want to make sure that we have room for one more question and then your questions also, Leah, as well. So Chris, do you want to ask?
Sure. So the next question is related to something that you touched on in your last response. You mentioned a little bit about using data to tell a story, to make decisions and things like that. So data-driven problem solving is part of our culture at NCTE, and I would say that we're starting to do more of it. It's a place that we want to be like really, really leading all of our marketing decisions with data, because we have a, just being able to spend our marketing budget in really smart ways. We're doing a lot of things. We're testing and learning from lots of things we're doing right now. So something we're starting to do more of and no doubt striving for to do better in the future. So we're looking for, you know, a manager that not only loves data, but also appreciates how it can inform and shift their work and their learnings. So given this context, we'd love to hear about a time when you use marketing data to inform a complex sales-related problem you're trying to solve. So if you can just kind of talk a little bit about the situation and the context, what issue were you trying to solve for? What did the data tell you? So what story did it tell, and how did you use it to help solve the problem?
I know that, especially with the social media, we were spending money on advertising and also Google AdWords and whatnot. We were spending money and we weren't getting the return on the investment. Now, I don't like know all the specifics because I wasn't completely in charge of it, but I was reviewing some of the presentations that my supervisor had done about all of the marketing efforts that we were working on. I just knew that when we got smarter with looking at the data, we were able to spend less money and get more for it. In return. And I really like enjoyed the testing part of the whole like getting data, because the best way to understand what's working is to compare it to something else. And we started doing a lot of ads on Facebook and Instagram, and we would like use lots of different images and combinations of text. And it was interesting to see which ones worked the best. I mean, a lot of, you know, the way I feel about data is like, if you're not going to listen to it, don't even get it. Don't even spend the time like compiling it. Because if you're going to, and I felt like people were just wanted to do certain things and it didn't matter if it worked or not, and they were just going to do it. I'm like, okay, well then we're not going to waste time presenting data to you because you obviously aren't going to listen to it. And, but sometimes you need to get that data showing that something doesn't work to prove it to these people. And so like I knew in social, for Learning Without Tears, the things that were going to work the best and to drive people to our website and whatnot are, you know, downloads and useful, fun activities with Matt Man. Like, he's one of our best characters and people love him. And the thing that was least effective was promoting webinars with very unappealing graphics. And so when we like did a deep dive into all our social media efforts throughout COVID, the things that did the best and led to the most traffic and new potential leads were, you know, offering these free resources, getting them to sign up for it. And then we're planning on building out a campaign to, you know, reach out to these people in the future. I was going somewhere there with that. But like I said, yeah, like the thing that got frustrating is that we would present data and then people would be like, I don't understand this. And I'm like, how can you not understand it? It's so clear. So I do know, and then somebody like a millennial will come in and make it look pretty and have a presentation and I'd be like, okay, this gets the point across definitely. And they still don't get it. So some people, you'll never be able to get them to understand the importance of data. I don't know what to do, but hopefully that answers the question. Trying to keep on time here, sorry.
Great. Thank you, Leah. And I definitely want to, again, allow some time for you to ask questions as well. So what questions do you have for us?
So did you all see the assignment that I did? Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've seen my resume and heard me talk. After all of this, do you want to end the call right now? Just kidding. What about me appeals to you for this position, and what reservations do you have? If any, hopefully none.
Chris, it looked like you were going to jump in unless you want me to there.
Sure. So I did quickly went through your thought exercise, and I thought you did a really nice job with it in terms of picking out the things that you could have done differently with the campaign. And I think the big thing is we only gave limited information with regard to that thought exercise. So we gave you a weak snapshot. We didn't give you any information or background on the extent of the campaign, like what other channels were used. Did we just do those ads, or did we use email to push that book? Did we have any other things, you know, on social? So it was, I thought it was really interesting and really good that you had pulled out a lot of additional ideas. Had we said we are doing a huge, robust campaign around just this one publication. And the reality is NCTE publishes probably around 15 to 20 new books each year. So usually 8 to 10 each fall and 8 to 10 each spring, summer in our new catalogs. So we usually never do a campaign around like one book. This one was unique in that we targeted during National Poetry Month, mm-hmm. which we also had a constant cadence of emails going out about finding poets that were written. The content was actually curated and written by our members, mm-hmm. and was sent out to people to sign up for these poetry emails that they would get on a essentially every day of the month in April. So I thought it was interesting, unique, that you pulled out a lot of additional marketing ideas that, you know, had we, you know, surrounded this book with, a singular campaign that we could have done, you know, speaking to the author, video, you know, things like that. So I thought it was really, really cool and interesting that you like went a little further with mm-hmm. With some of your analysis and additional ideas to to do more. You're definitely an idea person, which was really nice to see. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep. That I agree with those points. And there were a couple of really good points that you did highlight in the thought exercise. To what Chris said, and I'm looking at it right now on my other screen. To what Chris mentioned, we were intentional in not giving all of the information. Now I'll revisit that in just a second. So it was great to see your questions of, well, there's more I could tell if I had more data at my fingertips. Mm-hmm. What I was going to touch on when I mentioned we gave you part of the information, that's also an area that, to be perfectly upfront, we are very much still building. I think Chris touched on this earlier as well. We have some information. We leverage some information. We could be leveraging what we have more consistently, and we could be building out a more effective data set as well. And that, I think, is one critical area that we're expecting this role to build capacity and muscle around internally. So I heard points of that within your responses. That is really going to be a strong area that we're going to be considering for the role among the candidates that are coming to the table. I will say a couple of things that stuck out to me from your discussion points: your passion about what you do, and your references multiple times about digging in wearing multiple hats. That's a reality of a small organization, and that's very much a reality within NCTE as well. So that's a great understanding point to have during this kind of discussion. We never want to bring somebody in that's more comfortable in a siloed organization where roles are really narrowed down and there's not a lot of fluctuation between. Mm-hmm. There's a certain type of team member that works well in an environment where you're really touching all areas of the organization and jumping in where you need to. So it was great to hear those points as well. What do you have other questions for us?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, like, I've been telling people, like, I could be an HR manager because I've seen so many good examples of an interviewing process and bad examples of it. And I always enjoy, first of all, like, this is the first time where, actually, maybe I had one other. I had one other position where I had a timed writing exercise, and I freaked out. I'm going to be honest, and I didn't get an interview, but I'm kind of glad I didn't, because it was a city job, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I can work for the government. But the timed, I mean, this was timed, but you could, like, pick the time, you know? But, like, knowing that, and by the way, when I had that timed exercise, it was when they were doing the George Floyd murder announcement. I was like, oh great, no. Like, I'm watching CNN trying to write this exercise about why you should visit Charlottesville. Okay. Oh God, it was horrible. Anyway, but so to me, like, the why I really loved this whole interviewing process was, first of all, I'm not gonna lie, I was terrified when I got that exercise. I'm like, I haven't done anything like this in a long time, you know, but I, you know, this is exciting. And then after I decided not to panic, and I was like, you know what, focus on what you're excited about with this project, which is researching everything that they, you know, you could possibly have done, what you have done, and finding out about the author, da, 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 da. Like, I love researching things. I don't like making decisions on it. Like, for instance, with the track club, I was like, wow. After doing this thought exercise, I thought, I need to do that. And my dad, I love him, he was like, you need to do this template of this, like, PowerPoint that you did for them and do it for other things. And I'm like, that's a good idea, Dad. So I was thinking, I'm going to do this whole kind of, for the board of the track club, do a presentation about the track meets and how, you know, use data to prove that that I am I moved to an all online registration system. You know, I made all these changes that have improved the revenue of the track meets. We had more participants than ever, da 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 da. And then I was going to have, like, a list of suggestions of what we can do to fix them and to even improve them even more. And I did a survey, like, on the fly, like, all these things a board might be like, why didn't you ask us, da da da. I'm like, no, I want to get things done, get the data, da da da. So I'm going to be working on that this weekend. But I did research on, like, what are other track meets doing? And so I just love research. What was important to me about this whole interviewing process is that you could see that I was able to display what kind of work I could produce before you talk to me, because you can have an interview with, like, I had an interview with like an HR, just an HR person, and maybe he didn't like me and I didn't get a second interview with the person I'd actually be working with, you know, then what, you know, so they could have lost a good opportunity. I also had an interview once with, where I had like the second best interview I've ever had with the HR person who, like, she's like, I feel like I've known you forever. And then I interviewed for the person I was going to work with, and it, we didn't click at all, and I withdrew. So, like, it would have been great to know that before, you know, like, not get my thought excitement up about this position and find out the person I'd be working with is somebody I couldn't work with. So, so I like the idea that I can demonstrate, you know, my passion or skills and then have the conversation, but I still wasn't willing. I went, actually did go to talk to the Charlottesville Career Center to get some advice about this, because, like, I'm like, you know, is it me? And, you know, I have a lot of interviews, but I, you know, I don't know, you know, a lot of things are in the works, but, like, how do I make sure that I don't have any regrets about the interview? Maybe I'm too honest, da, da, da. And he's like, you know, don't look at it as not being honest, you know, but maybe do this or that. So I, but I'm like, I can't. Like, I just have to be me, is, you know, but I'm also smart in that I'm trying to give you real life examples of the type of person I am and the decisions I make and the impact I make. So that being said, what are the next steps for this process?
Yep, that's super helpful. And honestly, I would echo the feedback that you got from the Charlottesville Career Center. We want to have conversations, mm-hmm. not interviews where we get an edited version mm-hmm. of a potential team member. Mm-hmm. So I definitely appreciate the fact that you've brought your true self. As you said, that is really important to our conversations. It is. And beyond that, also, I appreciate the feedback on the process, because it's important to us. We're working with an HR provider for this interview recruiting process. That's part of Erica, who I believe you've been in mm-hmm. touch with. She comes from this organization where their muscle is really around how do we approach interviews in a way that is inclusive. Mm-hmm. And that includes more than just the conversation. Mm-hmm. That includes really the opportunity to evaluate a candidate through multiple mediums. So mm-hmm. it's great to hear that feedback, and I appreciate your thoughts in general. So in terms of next steps, we do have additional rounds of interviewing. Chris and I are meeting. We're wrapping up first round by the end of next week, mm-hmm. And then working with our folks at Talented Advisors, Erica, to determine next rounds. And then she's really coordinating those interviews from there. So she should, any follow-up questions that you have, please reach out to Erica, mm-hmm. and she will walk you through next steps and timing as we're really coordinating calendars and looking at where we stand for the selection
process. That next step, interviewing, just out of curiosity, who's that with, like, in terms of talk, who do you talk to?
It could be Chris or I. It could also be our executive director. We're working through schedules and, okay. and availability as well. But with a small team, we've got a pretty small group involved in this process also.
Okay. And what's your targeted start date for whoever you end up hiring?
Yesterday? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know.
That's always the goal.
2020.
Right. 2020. In all reality, we are looking to at least extend an offer in August. So okay. we are looking to, as quickly as we can move through the process while making sure it's methodical and inclusive, mm-hmm. we are looking to move forward relatively quickly.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I see we are right on time with time to flip over the next meeting. So I hope you have a good afternoon and the weather clears up so you can take a run.
Yeah, I know. My husband, he's getting more miles.
There you go. You
have
to catch up.
I know. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Likewise. Thanks, okay. Leah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.